Great. Let's begin. Or la arba asar, bodkin et hametz la or haner. Kol makom shein machnisim bo hametz, ein tsarich bedika. Velama amru shtei shirot bamartev, makom shemachnisim bo hametz. Bet shamay omrim shtei shirot al pnei chol amartev, ubet hilel omrim shtei shirot achitzonot shehein ha'elyonot. So literally at the light of the 14th, but in an expression that until modern, even until modern Hebrew today, means the night before, light of the 14th here, meaning the night leading into the 14th, with the Jewish day beginning at the night time. We're talking here about the night of the 14th of the month of Nisan, obviously the month that's significant for Pesach. And the mitzvah that we're talking about is the mitzvah of bidikat chametz, the mitzvah of checking for chametz around the house. The Torah talks about when we get to Pesach, tashbitu se'or mi batechem, you have to get rid of all the chametz in your house. And the prerequisite in rabbinic sources for that is just the checking in various places around the house. So this is saying you do that on the night of the 14th, which means the night before the Seder, and you check the chametz la'or haner with the light of a lamp. This is not done during the day, but is done at night. And you do it, as the Talmud understands, because you will actually, through the contrast of the night and the light, see things more clearly than you would when you are searching around during the day. And the sunlight basically does not allow for a kind of pointed use of light to locate things throughout one's house. The Mishnah then goes on to say, the general rule is you don't have to check any place where you don't bring chametz. So you're looking for places where you might have eaten it, where you might be bringing in something that's forbidden to eat on Pesach. But you don't go searching in crazy places all around your house, like the upper, the upper shelf of a closet where you never put any kind of food. And the Mishnah seems to have its own reference point of some place that is beyond where you would have to check. It says here, why did they say two rows in the cellar? Shtei shurot bamartef. This is a very unusual Mishnah where it's sort of referring to something they clearly know from elsewhere. And it's a great example of the Mishnah kind of exists in a larger soup, as it were, of various texts that it already assumes you have some engagement with. And so there apparently was like a text that's earlier than this Mishnah, which talked about only checking the first two rows in a wine cellar. That's the limit of where you go. But that text did not spell out why would that be the limit. So the Mishnah here says, Lama amrush teshurot bamartev, why did they say you must check the first two rows? Makom shemachnisim bo chametz. That's as far as people bring chametz into the wine cellar. People bring food down while they're going to get something out of the basement, think like the basement refrigerator, something like that. But they're not going deep into their storage spaces in the basement, and therefore you don't have to check beyond that. Beit Shammai omrim shtei shurot al pnei kol hamartev, uveit Hillel omrim shtei shurot hachitzonot shehen ha'elyonot. So here we see that actually this standard of two rows in the cellar, shtei shurot bamartev, is even older than Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, who are some of the earliest voices in the Mishnah. We're talking about voices from the early part of the first century of the Common Era. They're already arguing over what was the definition of the term shtei shurot bamartev. They both agree that you only have to check and must check the first two rows in the wine cellar, but they are not actually sure what that means. So Beit Shammai say it's the two rows across the entire cellar, whereas Beit Hillel say it's only the two outer ones, which are the uppermost. There's some debate and discussion, what does this mean? But the simplest picture would seem to be you have a wine cellar where you have not only a bunch of rows of barrels, but also they are stacked up in some way, one on top of the other. And Beit Shammai seem to think you need to check sort of all of the barrels from top to bottom, all the way across the outer surface of the wine cellar where the barrels are stored, and go one row deep into that. Whereas Beit Hillel seems to think you're only checking the two top rows. You're not worried about stuff that may have fallen there on the bottom. You're literally worrying about someone coming down to get the wine, taking a sandwich, leaving it on one of the barrels, and they're only going to do that on one of the top two. Again, lots of debates about what's the actual architecture and geometry here in the cellar. But the basic idea is that even Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, as they disagree, are trying to get to some reasonable estimate of how far do you have to check and how thoroughly do you have to check. So, you know, this gets into, in terms of contemporary application, once this gets translated into more practical halakha, you know, would you have to check, you know, parts of the bathroom, as I mentioned, you know, a closet, things in all kinds of storage areas. And the general principle is, again, the key phrase in our Mishnah is makom she'ein machnisin bo chametz, a place where you don't ever bring chametz into, ein sarich bdika, doesn't require any kind of checking. All right, that's our first Mishnah, which lays out the basic principle and gives a little bit of a picture from life in terms of how this is supposed to be played out. So yeah, all kinds of questions already, people chatting in, you know, who has a wine cellar? Are we dealing here in the Mishnah with someone who's wealthy? Those are all good questions. The Mishnah has some degree of inconsistency, I would say, as to whether it sounds like it's talking about wealthy people, landowners, people with a significant amount of property, or it's talking about, you know, common folks who may have much less than that. The nice thing about this Mishnah is it's both giving you a picture of life, but it is also giving you a principle. And the principle is ultimately what guides. Let's go to the next Mishnah, Mishnah Bet. Ein choshashin, shema garara chulda, mi bayit levayit, u mi makom lemakom, deim kein, mechatzer lechatzer, u meir leir, ein ladavar sof. So one of the most aggravating things about checking for chametz is that you might worry that after you check for chametz, there was an animal that brought some back, right? How do I know I'm ever done unless I completely blowtorch and disinfect everything, not to get it too close to the current moment, all at once? How do I know? How do I know that it's really done? And this Mishnah is sort of trying to shut down the extreme nervousness you might have at this by getting you to concede that there's a reductio ad absurdum here. If you start worrying that a weasel, a mouse, a rat, some kind of rodent is bringing chametz from one place to another, from one of your structures to another, from one part of the house to another, that is unreasonable. And ein choshashin here, I want to be clear, is not that you wouldn't worry, because the reader of the Mishnah clearly is worried. It's that you should not worry, or more to the point, even if you are worried, that worry has no legal force. Why do we not worry about something going from one place to another? Because if you worried about that, it could then go from one courtyard to another, from one city to another, and ein la davar sof. There would be no end to the matter. Now, you know, that doesn't fully answer the question, which is to say, well, what if there's no end to the matter? And here, what if actually there is no way of ever being at rest with respect to chametz? And here you see, you know, the Mishnah's perspective of, you've got to be able to actually do this. This has to be doable. And it's perhaps reflective of a kind of broader perspective of, the mitzvot are doable. You actually have to be able to do them in one way or another. So a requirement to get Seor, get chametz out of your house, mi bateichem, must basically be limited to getting it out of your house. And once you've gotten it out of your house, you don't worry about there being some, you know, some dramatic situation or undetectable situation where it has gotten back into that house. Okay? Those are the first two Mishnayot that are trying to put some degree of cap on Bidikat Chametz. I think it's also kind of super interesting. It sort of shows that the neurosis of, oh my God, have I done this well enough? What if this is off? What if that is off? Is a very old one, right? And the Mishnah itself is trying to control some of the instincts in that regard. Great, let's move on to the third Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bodkin or Arba'asar, Uva Arba'asar Shacharit, Uvishat HaBiur. V'chachamim Omrim, Lo Vadak or Arba'asar, Yivdok Be'Arba'asar. Lo Vadak Be'Arba'asar, Yivdok B'Toch HaMo'ed. Lo Vadak B'Toch HaMo'ed, Yivdok Le'achar HaMo'ed. U'ma She'Meshayer Yanichenu B'Tzin'ah, Kedei She'lo Yehei Tzarich B'Dika Acharav. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda is now engaging with the situation where the checking may not have happened at the appropriate time, and then when do you do it? And there are two ways of reading this Mishnah, and I'll read them both ways for you, just so we feel the two possibilities. Let's start. The first way is, Rabbi Yehuda says the following. The first Mishnah told us, we're supposed to do Bidikat Chametz the night before the Seder, or Arba Asar. The Seder is the night of the 15th, and the night, or the light, euphemistically, of the 14th, is the night before. That's when you're supposed to do it. But of course, Pesach doesn't start until the next night. And not only that, but there's not actually even a prohibition on Chametz until you get to midway through the day on the 14th. So Rabbi Yehuda seems to be playing with the possibility that, all right, you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to check this on the night of the 14th. But what if you missed that? All right? Or are there other times where you're supposed to be checking in an ongoing way? So the simple way of reading Rabbi Yehuda is, Bodkin or Arba'asar, Uva Arba'asar Shacharit, Uvishat HaBiur, that Rabbi Yehuda thinks you are actually supposed to basically be doing a check for Chametz throughout the 14th. You start on the night of the 14th, you do another check and continue to check the morning of the 14th. And then Bishat HaBiur, which here we'll read as the time where you are burning the Chametz on the morning of the 14th, you also do a kind of final check then to make sure as you're about to burn it, everything is out. So Rabbi Yehuda's picture is sort of that the Mishnah, when it said check on the night of the 14th, means you kick off the process then, and then you simply go through the whole day until Chametz is forbidden, continuously in an ongoing way, being involved with getting it out of your house. The Chachamim, the sages here, say, no, that's not what's going on here. You basically are, in theory, supposed to be completing the check on the night of the 14th. If you didn't get to checking on the 14th, then check on the 14th first thing in the morning. You haven't missed your chance. And if you didn't check first thing in the morning, yivdok b'toch ha-mo'ed. And if we read this consistent with Rabbi Yehuda above, then yivdok b'toch ha-mo'ed means at the specified time, the appointed time when you're supposed to burn the chametz on the 14th. Lo badak b'toch ha-mo'ed, and if you didn't even check while it was the time to actually be burning the chametz, Yivdok le'achar moed, then you still have the whole rest of the 14th to continue to check and get it out of there before Pesach hits that night on the 15th. Okay? That seems to be the simplest way to talk about this. It's all about how do we handle checking on the 14th of Nisan. Rabbi Yehuda sees an extended process that goes through the burning. And Chachamim say you should ideally do it all the night before, but you have ultimately these different checkpoints of the dawn, the time of burning, and up until Pesach starts to still get it done. However, the word moed is not the same as biur, right? The word moed, appointed time, seems to have a different meaning than the time when you burn it. And therefore, there are some who read this as a more extreme point. Chachamim say, if you didn't check the night of the 14th, then you should check on the 14th, meaning the whole day of the 14th. If you didn't check for chametz at all before Pesach, lo badak b'arba'asar, yivdok betoch hamoed, you should check for chametz in the middle of Pesach, during Chol HaMoed, on the actual holiday itself. You still have an obligation to make the effort to get the chametz out, even though Pesach has already started. And then perhaps the most extreme in this reading, and if you went through all of Pesach never having checked for chametz, you should, after Pesach is over, be checking for chametz and get it out of your house. That is to say, there's still an obligation that is waiting to be tended to clean your house of chametz once a year, and it doesn't matter, actually, if you only got to it after Pesach. Those are two very interesting and very different readings. However you read it, though this seems to work better with the first one, Masha Mishayer, if there's something that you leave over from the night of the 14th, okay, because after all, you do need something, you do have to eat something in the morning, Yanichenu Vitzina, you have to set it aside so that you won't need to do another check. And this is practice until today, right at the Dikat Chametz on the night of the 14th, you find everything in your house, you set aside whatever you think you're going to eat for that next morning, and you keep it in a controlled place. And then you eat it in the morning, but not in a way that should undo the work that you did. Yeah, some great comments. Lots of procrastination psychology in these readings. The Mishnah definitely wants you to do it on time, but it's aware that it lives in a world where that doesn't always happen. And so this Mishnah is interested, I think, in pushing the limits of how much is this just like an absolute requirement? You know, it's almost, it has its own religious weight. Like a lot of us think of, I think a lot of us think of chametz as fundamentally being, bedikat chametz as fundamentally being a kind of preparation for Pesach. I think what's interesting about that second reading of the Chachamim is maybe the notion that, no, like once a year, you have to go through this. Of course, you're supposed to do it before Pesach because you're not supposed to own chametz on Pesach. But at the end of the day, it has its own integrity. Excellent. Okay, good. Thank you. I appreciate that my tie was noticed. It wasn't so logical for me to put it on first thing in the morning today. All right, next, Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is going to take us into the world of, well, what exactly does the day, what does the day of the 14th look like in terms of our relationship with chametz? I think we'll get through the next two Mishnayot and call it a day. Rabbi Meir Omer, Ochlin kol chamesh, v'sorfin b'tchilat shesh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ochlin kol arba, v'tolin kol chamesh, v'sorfin b'tchilat shesh. Okay, so we are now dealing with the breakup of the day on the 14th of Nisan into hours. So every day in rabbinic time is divided into 12 hours, 12 sha'ot zmaniyot, which are basically calculated by taking the time from sunrise to sunset, dividing them into 12, and each of those becomes a rabbinic variable hour. So at the equinox, those are what we call an hour. Off of the equinox at the solstices, depending on where you are on the globe, they will be significantly shorter or significantly longer. Around Pesach, we're about at the equinox. So I will just use some basic equivalents here. If you assume that the day starts at 6 a.m. and ends at 6 p.m., so the first hour runs 6 to 7, right? And the fifth hour will run from 10 to 11, and the sixth hour will run 11 to 12, and so on and so forth. So Rabbi Meir says, when you think about dividing up the time on the 14th, you are allowed to eat chametz for all first 5 hours of the day. That is to say, you're allowed to eat chametz until 11 a.m. on a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. clock, where you are right smack in the middle of the time zone, you know, at the exact place where that lines up. Of course, this will be different, you know, depending on where you are. But Rabbi Meir says you can eat all first 5 hours of the day chametz for until 11 a.m. V'sorfin b'tchilat shesh, and at the beginning of the sixth hour, which is 11 a.m., you burn it. Okay, that's when you do the burning. And I'll come back and give the background to this in a second. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, uchlin kol arba, you can only eat until 10 a.m., the first 4 hours. V'tolin kol chamesh, and there's a kind of interstitial period where from 10 to 11, the chametz is suspended. And then at the beginning of the sixth hour, 11 a.m., sorfin, it is burned. Okay, so what's going on here? What do we have both in terms of these rulings and why? So the context here is that the Torah tells us that we're not allowed to eat chametz on Pesach. But in addition to that, it tells us about the Korban Pesach, about the Pesach offering in the Beit HaMikdash, that lo tochal alav chametz. You may not eat chametz with the Korban Pesach. Now, that seems completely obvious. You can't eat chametz with the Korban Pesach. You eat it on Pesach. So what could that verse possibly mean? So the rabbinic tradition interprets that lo tochal alav chametz, you should not be eating chametz while the Korban Pesach is being offered, or more to the point, when it could be offered. That is to say, any time that's already eligible for the sacrifice of the Korban Pesach, even though you're not eating it until the night, any time eligible for its preparation in the temple, which is essentially from noon onwards on the 14th, is off limits for chametz, okay? And that means that there is a biblical prohibition, as understood by rabbinic interpretation, there's a biblical prohibition on eating chametz in the afternoon before the Seder. It's not the same level of karet, of the strict penalty of being cut off, however we understand karet, that applies during Pesach itself, but it's nonetheless a prohibition. And that's why traditionally, certainly Jews had any number of traditional dishes. In my wife's family, it was a flummen and flanken meat and prune dish that you ate on the afternoon of the Seder, before the Seder, because you can't be eating any chametz at that point, and you're not yet able to eat matzah. So that gets us to the afternoon chametz is out. But what you see in this Mishnah is there was a sense that actually we have to be a little more careful with backing off of noon. They don't really have the precise clocks that we have, and there's a sense of sort of gauging when the sun is near the midpoint in the sky. And so everyone is backing up an hour. There's a sense here of when it's 11 a.m., which they're not measuring by a clock, right? But by some basic sense of the sun has reached a point in the sky where it seems to me like it's approaching, it's zenith. There's an added hour that's added on. So everyone agrees that you're not eating past 11 a.m. The debate between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is, do we allow you to walk right up to that that boundary, again, self-imposed boundary, and eat the food? That's Rabbi Meir, Ochlin kol chamesh v'sorfin b'tchilat shesh. Or with Rabbi Yehuda, do we build in another additional hour, where we basically say you stop eating chametz at 10 a.m., you burn it at 11, and from 10 to 11, the chametz is suspended. Now, what that means practically is chametz that is truma, chametz that was designated for a priest and would only have been eaten by a kohen, there is sort of nervousness about burning that too early. You don't want to ever burn something that's a sacred food when it could be eaten. So even though you want people to stop eating even earlier, stop at 10 a.m. to be super safe, you've got to wait to burn it until you're at least close to the noon mark, because otherwise you are mima'et ba'achilat kodashim, you are limiting the amount that sacred foods are being eaten. So you have this sort of liminal hour from 10 to 11 where you neither eat it nor you burn it. This is our practice today as well. Standard practice is that At the end of the fourth hour, and you'll see this on any, you know, luach or anything else that gives out times for when you eat, when you stop eating chametz on Erev Pesach, they'll say time for eating chametz and time for burning chametz. And that gap is because of Rabbi Yehuda's position here in the Mishnah. I'll just finish out with this picture, which gives you a lovely image of what it was like in the time of either the temple and Rabbi Yehuda's remembering it, or that there's some other thing that they were doing in the wake of the temple to mimic it. Ve'od amar Rabbi Yehuda, shtei chalot shel todaf sulot munachot al gag ha'itztaba. Kol zman shemunachot, kol ha'am ochlin. Nitla achat, tolin, lo ochlin ve'lo sorfin. Nitlu shtehen, itchilu kol ha'am sorfin. Rabban Gamliel omer, chuli ne'echalin kol arba, utruma kol chamesh, ve'sorfin bitchilat shesh. So Rabbi Yehuda added, he said, the way they would actually sort of zone for this and send the signal about this in Jerusalem was they would take two loaves of bread that were from a todah offering, from a Thanksgiving offering that had somehow become psulot, that had somehow become invalidated in the process of preparing them. Meaning these are just basically sort of cast-offs from, you know, accidents that happen in the temple. And they've got two loaves of bread that no one's going to eat. And they use them as a kind of signal to the people in the city around the timing of chametz. They would take two of them and put them up on the roof of the temple portico. And as long as there were two loaves up there, everyone knew, oh, it's still fine to eat chametz. When one of them was taken off, that would move them to the suspending phase, where you would not eat chametz, but you would not yet burn it. Once both of them had been taken off, itchilu kol ha'am sorfin. And I love that image. It gives you a sense of even back then, there was a sort of big party of burning chametz that lots of people got into. And then we finally get a dissenting point of Rabban Gamliel, who says, no, you guys actually have it wrong. There's not this dead hour where we're not eating, but not burning. It's chulin. Mundane, non-sacred produce, that is to say, just the regular bread that most people have, that you eat up till 10. Truma, however, the stuff that's fit for priests, actually you can eat it all the way up till 11. He thought as long as you weren't going to burn the truma, you should feel free to eat it, and then you burn everything starting at the beginning of the sixth hour, which again is 1 hour before noon. So you get a great picture there of the ways in which this is really was a live practice. And I think with everything with Pesach, it's really intense to sort of see how much all of Am Yisrael gets into it. It's true, obviously, until today, many people who don't connect to other parts of the calendar still very much connect to Pesach. And we got little snippets of that in the context of this Mishnah. Hope everyone is doing well and you have a great rest of the day. Thanks so much for joining.